is out there too, so are we okay? Good. Well, welcome to our 2014 Community Forum. This is going to be relatively easy tonight. This is our mission at Imagine. And I just said that we're out online, so those that are listening online, welcome to our forum. I will keep tabs with you on what slide we're looking at. We're on slide 3 now. What I want to do is just give you the background about how Imagine's set up. We have a volunteer board of directors, and Laura Koch, sitting in the back, is our representative board member so far. And following this meeting is our monthly board meeting, so you're welcome to stay for that. It's a public meeting, but most of what you hear here is probably what we might talk about briefly there. So, but you're welcome to stay. They're my boss. And then our Imagine staff, we have a handful of staff in the room. We have probably closing in on 600 employees at Imagine now. Our network of providers is over 200, but of those 200, there's probably 80 or so recognized by the state as program-approved service agencies. Even though we have that many for families to choose from, there are only about 20 or 25 that are actively serving people from Imagine. Now, a lot of these providers are providing services in other catchment areas. They could be all over the state. They could be all over the Front Range. Just because they're available here doesn't necessarily mean that a family has picked them. What's next? This year we have a lot to look forward to. We have some challenges, but this year we are in much better shape looking down the road than we have been for several years. As you recall, back in from about 2008 on, we went through the recession, and that had some effect on us, and then the state was rearranging how it was doing business, and that had an effect on us. None of those were really good for us. But last year and this year, and looking forward to the next couple of years, we really have some nice things to look forward to. We have a few challenges, though, at the same time. So I'm going to go through some of those. This slide is just to give you an idea of size and scope. How many people are we talking about that Imagine is paying attention to? Early intervention is our children that are 0 to 3 years of age. We have 484 today enrolled in that service, and you can imagine that number changes every single day. There isn't a day that goes by that number doesn't change. It grows very slowly. It was growing relatively quickly for a while, but we've sort of flattened out now in our growth in early intervention. We have probably 60 to 80 providers of services for those children. Most of the services are in the family home. And those services are made up mostly of therapies, OT, PT, speech, early childhood education, and some behavioral stuff for some of the kids now that are being diagnosed with autism much earlier than in the last few years. In our family support program, we have 963 individuals that we're tracking. So to be eligible for that, people cannot be in any of the other services, but they're still living at home with their parents. So if a person had an intellectual developmental disability but could live semi-independently on their own without any support from the state, they would not be eligible for the service. So these individuals are all living with the family. Most of them are adolescents, but what happened is family support started capturing people as they grew into adult life, and there were no resources for them from the state. Over the last few years, that number has been growing with people living with their family for much longer. In our children's extensive support waiver, so these are children who have extraordinary behavioral or medical needs. And this is the target that the state had last year. The governor funded a large number of resources to try to end that wait list. Well, hopefully that's going to end actually coming into the next year. Last year we were serving 25, 30 kids in that. Now we're serving, closing in on 76. And we still have about 40 waiting. But we're expecting that within about 6 months, we won't have anyone waiting for that service. Our foster care program is specifically for children in foster care placements who have an intellectual developmental disability. That's one of the handful of services that we are providing for about 10 counties now, so not just in Boulder and Broomfield. And we have about 5 or 6 kids in the pipeline for that service right now. Again, one of the exceptions that we have in terms of how many counties we're serving. In supported living services, we're currently serving 260 individuals. Adult comprehensive, that's the HCBS DD waiver. That's typically what was known as out-of-home placement. Not anymore, though, because you can have your sons and daughters served in your home in the comprehensive service waiver. New in the last couple of years, and that has become extremely popular for families to actually be employees of the provider, keep their adult sons and daughters at home for as long as they want, before maybe they move off into a host home later on, or maybe never. So a new option, and it's really popular across the state. There's some glitches here and there across the state on some providers trying to figure out all of the details about that, because when your home becomes our place of work, creates a couple of challenges, but we've been able to get through those pretty well. And then the number of eligible adults who are not funded by one of the waiver programs is up over 300, 350 right now. You add all these things up, and we're serving any given day or tracking over 2,400 individuals in Boulder and Broomfield County. So that's a little bit about the size. Here's the first of the challenges we've had. At the end of last year, and I talked about this at our forum last year, there was a surplus building in the state of unspent money. Now, even though we have wait lists in the state of Colorado, there have been reasons why dollars have been building up in the Department of Human Services last year as being unspent. And a lot of it has to do with the delay in filling vacancies. And the issue about the delay is not necessarily all with the state, and it's not necessarily all with the providers and the community center boards. What happens is a resource or a vacancy occurs. Say somebody passes away in La Junta. That resource gets pulled back by the state and issued out to the next person on the wait list statewide. And that person might be here. If it's here, they call us up at our case management department and they say, we have an adult resource for you, and you have 90 days to work with the family to fill it. 60 days will go by, and we started closing on the third month, and the family goes, well, we've decided we don't want it. We can't do anything else with that. We have to give it back to the state, and they go to the next person on the list, call up that community center board and say, we've got a resource for you, and they go through the same 90-day. So as those months are empty, there's no billing going on, that's one of the reasons this surplus starts to build up. At the same time, during fiscal year 12, the state had the opposite problem where there was not enough money, and they were over billing and running short of dollars, and they put in place some caps and narrowed the definition of behavioral services and put some caps on that so that regardless whether a person needed it or not, we weren't paid anymore for that kind of case management. We weren't paid for day hab services more than 4 days. Regardless of whether a person received that or not, the providers were not paid. It's an issue that I've brought back to the attention of the state because we understood in 2012 that the state was overspent by well over $30 million. And so when they said we have to put some caps and we have to put some brakes on, and this is one of the things they did, we were like, okay, we all understand that. Now the money's all swung the other way, and they've got extra money, and we're saying, remove all these caps now. Pay us for targeted case management. Pay us for full day services. And so far the answer has been no, but they're still building. One of the bigger reasons too for the surplus building is when the state set their budget, they have to do an estimation on how much each person is going to cost them. So in comprehensive waiver, for example, they're expecting that a person might cost them $66,000 or something like that. It might have been $67,000. So they use that estimate to be able to set their budget. Well, 2 years later, they're finding out that they're not really spending that much money. They might be spending $63,000 or $64,000 per person. Well, you multiply that times 4,000 people, all of a sudden you've got a surplus. One of the reasons that the estimation has dropped down, though, is because they put caps in services. So if you put the caps and put things back the way they were, maybe there wouldn't be such a not such a surplus anymore. We debated with the state, and this is all in last year's budget, that if the legislature put this money in place and intended it for services for folks with intellectual and developmental disabilities, then don't take that money back and give it to roads or take it back and give it to education. This is what they intended it for. The intent of the budget was to spend that money on people who have intellectual and developmental disabilities. Since it couldn't get spent in those 12 months, we worked with the legislature to pass a bill to create a cash fund to take the general fund portion of that, not the Medicaid portion, and put it in the cash fund for future use to relieve the adult wait list. So sitting in that cash fund now is $6.9 million. That was the end of last June. So if that's not interesting enough, this is maybe where it does get interesting. We knew the state was taking the division that's managing all these monies and transferring over to a new department, transferring it from Department of Human Services over to Healthcare Policy and Financing. And during that time, money was continuing to build this year. There were new resources this year. Vacancies weren't filled. Overestimated on the cost of what people were, all the same reasons. And knowing that we had these reasons in place, we knew coming out of the gate that there was going to be a surplus July 1st. We communicate with the State Department on a monthly basis. Please let us know how we're doing. And my job, I was asked by our provider network if I wouldn't be the person that reports to the Joint Budget Committee a couple of times saying, how's this transfer going? Well, we couldn't get information on how much money was building up, and so I'm telling the Joint Budget Committee, it looks like the transfer is going fine. We're moving our department from here to there. Sounds like they're on top of things. We haven't heard anything other than that until late in December of this year. And that's when we were surprised by the new department managing these funds, Department of Healthcare Policy and Financing, that not only was a $13 million surplus, we had a $23 million surplus. Picture this, we have the governor who's putting forth all kinds of new resources in his budget. We have the legislature that's passing that in the budget saying, yes, we want to spend all this on our wait list. And the legislature has got a big push on right now to end the wait list. And administratively, the state hasn't been able to move the money from the budget to the end user, to the client. So when we got this notice, and somebody picked it up for us, we didn't really see that it was happening, that Healthcare Policy and Financing was, what they do is they go back to the Joint Budget Committee and say, we've got too much money, we can't spend it, please take it back. And we're going, wait a minute, you got a few thousand people on a wait list over here, and the logic was, well, there isn't anybody in services that's going to be hurt by us if we give the $23 million back, and there's no way for us to be able to spend the money. So when I'm talking about this $23 million, it's only $23 million if you spend it. The way the waivers work is the state puts in a dollar, Medicaid, federal puts in a dollar, or we each put in 50 cents and you get a dollar. So the $23 million would be if we actually spend it and you put them both together. If you don't ever spend it on somebody, it's only $11.5 million. So we were pretty, when I say we, Imagine and all of the network of providers across the state weren't pleased about this. You can imagine. So we go to the legislature and say, the department's trying to give you back $11.5 million. We don't want that to happen. We think that you can do lots of other things to start to bring in new people into services without risking the state's future. In other words, if we took somebody off the wait list this year and spent some of that money, there wouldn't be any money next year for them unless the legislature comes up with it. But so we don't want to put them in a bad spot. But there were ways for us to be able to spend some of this money. So we worked with the one of the legislators on the Joint Budget Committee to pass a bill that's sitting on the governor's desk right now that will at least save $4.5 million of the $11 million. And that $4.5 million will help us do what has to be done next, which is build an infrastructure to do remarkable things with lots of new resources next year. So I'm working with the State Department and the legislature to figure out exactly what to do with that $4.5 million in the next 3 months. So that's pending, but it's the legislature's happy with it. The department's like, it's not their preference, but they know that this is a no-win situation for them, so they're gonna probably say, okay, you figure out a way to get the money out to the providers, we'll let that happen this year. So as part of that, here are the four pieces of legislation we're keeping an eye on. And the top one is the one I'm talking about right now. It's addressing this negative supplemental, this $23 million. If we are successful, we'll be able to save $4.5 million of that $1 million to be spent this year instead of losing it altogether. The next bill, the House Bill 1051, this conversation started about 9 months ago, actually almost 12 months ago now, where there are members of the legislature that have been fed up with a wait list for a handful of years. Across the aisle, Republicans and Democrats came together over the summer and said, what are we gonna do about it? What can we do as legislators? What they can't do is they can't say, well, we're gonna force the state to spend more money each year of the next 5 years or whatever to end the wait list, because they can't demand that the next set of legislators actually spend money. So they can't commit the state beyond their own year. But what they can do, and what they're doing, is demanding that the departments put together a plan in order to address and end the wait list by 2020. And they took it very seriously, and so didn't the governor, and so didn't the Joint Budget Committee legislators. So far, really good things are happening. They're demanding that the departments come in and report to them every year how many people are on the wait list now. And there has been a significant push to address the wait list in a big way, and I will get to that in a couple of minutes. A couple of the pending bills. There's about 150 kids with intellectual and developmental disabilities across the state who are in foster care placements. That happens to be managed by the Division for Child Welfare and the Department of Human Services. All of the other services for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities are handled by the Department of Healthcare Policy and Finance now. So we've been working with legislators to say, let's take the program for kids with IDD who happen to be in foster care and move it over and manage it with everybody else, particularly if they're 18 years old, because they're already adults. And that's what we do with supported living services. So why wait till they're 21? It's the counties would be happy with that. We would be happy with that. I'm pretty sure the kids would be happy with that. And right now, it appears that the department's been really kind of dragging its feet on this issue. It doesn't exactly require legislation to do it, but it may require legislation to force the department to take action. And so that's what this pending bill will likely do, and it will likely go in front of the legislature this spring. The next one is about the regional centers. There's about 150 people. It's about 300 people still in the regional centers, about 150 that they claim are ready to move out. I think I have another slide that describes that. Again, the legislature wants to see the regional centers addressed because they're far more expensive than services in the community. So they want a task force to analyze that over the summer and come back to the Joint Budget Committee with some recommendations like next year. That's likely to get addressed by the legislature this spring. And then regional centers, there's three regional centers, and the question is, what's the definition of a regional center? These are state-operated, state employees, three settings, one in Pueblo, one in in Arvada, and one in Grand Junction. And so all three of them operate similar waiver services to the private providers do, like us. And two of them are operating what's called an immediate care facilities for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Now, the immediate care facilities are funded differently. It's a cost reimbursement system, more expensive for the state. They don't have to be operated by the state. There is one private provider in the state that's operating five homes that are called ICFs, and they are it. And the state will not license anymore because they don't want to and they can't afford it, and I'm not really sure. They haven't paid a lot of attention to it. So one of the more of the reasons to do some analysis on that. So state employees cost a lot more than private employees do, so it's another reason why this is ramping up as an issue. The state did an audit of their own services last year. The Joint Budget Committee wasn't pleased with the result of that audit, so now they want a further analysis of it. And then the last piece of legislation, we're actually watching two others, but this is probably the most important one, which is the long bill, which is the state budget, and I'm going to get to the specifics about that. For the folks online, I'm going to slide 8. A few other things going on at the state. I mentioned that the Division for Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities was moved this current year, and it is complete. It is now sitting in new offices downtown Denver. We have new bosses. In other words, we're not exactly sure how this will play out, but I for one, am pretty optimistic that it will be easier working with the budget people, at least in healthcare policy and finance, although they do their work much differently than the Department of Human Services, and that will be a challenge for us, and it'll be a challenge for them too. We talked about moving the foster care kids aged 18 to 20 over to healthcare policy and financing. There's a bill pending there. Third bullet is moving the Division for Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities Quality Assurance. The Department of Healthcare Policy and Financing contracts all of their quality assurance and auditors over to Public Health and Environment, which is another department. So there's a all but complete of moving. You know, when the state comes out and audits our homes and looks at the services we're delivering, it used to be within the Division for Developmental Disabilities that was their employees that did that. That's no longer going to be the case. It's going to be a whole other department that's going to come out and look at our homes and look at our licenses and look at our quality of our services. And that is all but complete. It's just a bill that's going to be put in front of the legislature probably in a week. Yes. That's correct.
Is that a plan they have, or what's the plan?
It's a plan. So the question is about all this movement away from Department of Human Services. About 2 years ago, 3 years ago, was the beginning of that. Actually, I can say, maybe within the first year of this administration, they looked at specifically developmental disability services and how it's arranged in Colorado. How it was arranged was, healthcare policy and financing is the funding portion of it, and they're sort of like an insurance company, and the Department of Human Services actually managed the programs and managed the contracts out to the community. Some states continue to do it that way, and some states said, no, it'll be a lot more effective and cost-effective if we move it all into one department. And under the Hickenlooper administration, that's the way they looked at it. It required legislation to make this move. It wasn't smooth. It wasn't pretty. We didn't like it at first. I would say now, This is not jumping from the frying pan into the fire, but Department of Human Services, I think it's fair to say, has had a struggle with managing their services. They did their own audit of the Division for Voc Rehab, which sits in the Department of Human Services. That did not come out well, not at all. They audited the regional centers, which sits in the Department of Human Services. That didn't necessarily come out that well. Division for Developmental Disabilities also was having these big swings from $30 million cost overruns to $13 million surplus in 2 years. That wasn't going well. So when they said, you want to go and move, it was like, it makes me pretty nervous, because if you go over to healthcare policy and financing, which is this big, and developmental disability services is this big, we're going to get lost. That was the fear. That was what I was thinking. So I think now that we're there, now that we have new people that we have to interact with, I'm optimistic that it will be good. I have to be optimistic that it will be good. And I think that they've assured us that the way they manage money won't hurt us. Now, we could get plopped in with all services. So when they talk about rates and things like that, if a hospital gets a 1.5% rate increase, they'll just do it for everybody. Well, funding works differently for our kind of services than it does for hospitals. They don't historically pay a lot of attention to their providers. We have historically demanded a lot of attention. They manage their money completely differently, because a lot of what goes on in Medicaid, that is what healthcare policy and finance is it's something that's an entitlement for people. So they kind of look at their entitlement and say, that's how they manage their money. We're not an entitlement. We have wait lists this big. So it's different. And we will make a lot of noise. We have a constituency that makes a lot of noise. We have stakeholders that make a lot of noise that say, listen, this isn't fair. That's not fair. And everybody in the state knows that. So we're not used to each other. We will be. I don't know if that's good or bad, but we will get to know each other one way or the other. And we already have. That surprise of the $23 million surplus this year, we were not pleased with that, and we made a lot of noise, and the legislature really heard it. And I think it was heard up into the governor's office, saying this did not go well. This was a mistake. This was a communication mistake. This was a mistake that shouldn't have happened, and don't let it happen again. So that's why I'm optimistic. I think we made the right noise at the right time. The last bullet, again, along the same lines, the State Unit on Aging, what the state has in mind is what the federal government had in mind, and that was, aging and disability service are so similar that's managing it all in the same place. I've publicly said many times, I'm not a fan of that. I don't think that a 21-year-old with Down syndrome has the same kind of needs or interests that somebody who's 80 years old and is looking at long-term care. No. Federal government says, well, that's the way they think they're going to go. Colorado blindly jumped on board with that. So they're looking at this. They've been looking at it for 3 years. I don't think that's going to happen in the next 12 months. I don't think it'll happen in the next 2 years, but I could be wrong. And the idea is they would move that unit on aging into the Office of Community Living, which is where Developmental Disability Services sits. So we're keeping a very close eye on that.
Does that mean that the surplus budget that's in there was also applied to the aging?
No. Although they would claim that they don't have enough funding as well, I sit in groups that that report that to the state. The problem, again, I'm looking at it from a standpoint that if you're this big, and when I look at developmental disability services in the state, we're this big, and we know the aging population is going to be growing, all of a sudden the voice gets smaller. The needs are the same, but the voice gets smaller because now you're in a much bigger pot that's growing and has greater needs, and I don't want to compete with that. We're moving on to slide 9. This slide is all about celebration. This is the great thing that are happening at the state. wonderful things. The governor, in November, the governor has to put forth a budget proposal for the next year that starts in July. And his staff put together this amazing number of resources to move into the community. If you recall last year, what they wanted to do was end the HCBS CES wait list, which is the fifth bullet down, and they funded 576 resources, unheard of last year for those kids. Those are kids that are up until age 18 that have extraordinary needs, and we were just thrilled. So many resources that there was actually difficulty enrolling these kids because the state had to put together a plan on how do we roll this out, because there's not enough people to actually do all the work that's required to do that. Well, we thought 576 was a lot last year. That second bullet is 2,042 adults in SLS. 2,000 people who don't have services this year, all of a sudden, July 1st or beginning July 1st through the fiscal year, 2,000 people will be enrolled in SLS services if this passes in the long bill. Now, it's already gotten past the Joint Budget Committee, and the likelihood of this changing much is very low. I mean, it's very low that it will change. What I'm putting up here, if anything changes, it'll be just small things. So if you start at the top, 259 adults into the comprehensive service waiver. Last year we had 200. It was huge that we had 200 last year. We've been decades without this kind of growth into the adult system. The 242 adults in an SLS program, last year they grew by 7. I mean, it's just remarkable. These increases are in the SLS program, 25% increase in levels 1 through 6. You may not be familiar with that, but the levels are the supports intensity scale levels. And if you're level 2, then all of a sudden in your spiral, you can get a 25% increase in expenditure and a maximum 25% increase overall of your plan of care. The CES wait list, you know, granted that last year they tried to capture everybody, well, there was still growth in it, so they definitely will be ending it next year if this 279 number holds. So the first wait list to end will be the CES wait list. The 2,042 adults in the SLS waiver is 2/3 of the wait list. There's about 1,000 left. But when you start to watch what happens in this churn, and I'll get to it in a sec, the churn's going to take care of a bunch of that. 61 youths transitioning from the CES waiver at age 18, they go right into SLS. And we know there's 61 because the state keeps track of how many kids are turning 18. And then the big one at the bottom, the Family Support Service Program, in 2011, it was cut by 2/3, I believe. The entire budget for Family Support Services was cut by 2/3 of the budget, by basically $3.4 million. So that's getting restored back to the budget level of 4 years ago. Here's the additional plus. So 259 adults will come into the adult DD waiver. Many of them, not all of them, but many of them that are on that wait list are in SLS. So if you take, say, a couple hundred people that are in SLS, put them into the DD waiver, now we've got 2,242 adults going into SLS. So the churn starts. So every time that we get like a new resource given to Imagine, and they'll say, we've got a new comprehensive resource to give to somebody, to the next person on the list. The next person on the list happens to be getting SLS services right now. We move them from SLS into comprehensive services, may not change the services at all. They can still get them at home. That opens up an SLS resource. We get to control that here locally. It's the only one we get to control. And we go to our wait list and take the next person off the wait list to put in SLS. So this churn starts, and it takes 3 months each. The families can pick and choose. It take that long to pick and choose what they want to do. And what they have to pick is, who's the provider? What kind of a service am I looking for? Is it going to be a group home? Is it going to be a host home? Is it going to be a family caregiver in my home? Those things take time. So we understand that families take a few months to make these decisions. But while that's happening, there's no billing going on, so these, again, these surpluses start to build. Jim? Perfect question. Are there enough service providers to absorb the onslaught of resources? When I say we belong to Alliance, which is a statewide association of service providers, are doing we have a group that's doing surveys right now to find out what the capacity really is. Locally, we've brought the question up to our service providers in this area, and they have been optimistic, but there is a couple of bottlenecks. Should I get to those? Yes, I should. Let's say there are enough service providers to take this on. And I think the case is if families are choosing family caregiver or host home model for the 259 up here, doable. You want a group home? Forget it. Not going to be the case. SLS, from a provider standpoint, we have a lot of providers that can really absorb quite a bit. One of the bills that I didn't talk about is we are about to go into a debate with the division, the Department of Public Health and Environment, because right now they're requiring SLS and CES providers for some of the services to be licensed as to get a home care license. Cost them $2,200. There's not enough money in these rates to pay a small provider to pay $2,200 to become licensed. And what that money goes to the department to do is to hire people to come out and evaluate whether or not you're doing your job. That's how they get paid. So they put a fee on us to pay their staff to come out and tell us whether or not we can do our job or not. We're already regulated by the Division for Developmental Disabilities. We don't need that. So we're having this debate with them. If that doesn't get fixed, there's a lot of providers that are saying, we're not going to pay that $2,200 for that license. That's one bottleneck. So that's a bottleneck for this number here. That's a bottleneck for that number there. Yep. Yes, go ahead.
What's the most service you can get in SLS?
The average expenditure is around, John, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's about $13,000 or $14,000 a year.
But I mean, what does it look like?
Oh. I'm
still kind of new to this.
Okay.
That's why I'm here.
Laura? If they're in an apartment,
yes.
They could get day services, they could get employment services, they could get
personal care
services.
Okay.
Yeah, quite a bit of assistance.
So the second line, that's the people that right now are not getting anything.
This group. Now, at Imagine, and we're a little bit different, that we took, if you're in Boulder County, we took some of the mill levy and addressed people on the wait list with that. And if you're in Broomfield County, we added about 9 or 10 adults served with local funds from Broomfield. So some people were getting some services. Now, unfortunately, in Boulder, the Boulder County initiative was a lot more flexible than what the Medicaid services are, but there's a lot more money in the Medicaid services. Yes? Right. The FSSP is not a waiver program. That's a state general fund program, and we use it specifically for family grants to families who have their son and daughters at home, mostly targeting adolescents. But it is a general fund program. A lot of flexibility in what the families can do with it. Not a lot of support. So it's $1,000 or $1,500 grant. Sometimes we'll fund a little bit more than that. The SPALs are, that is just speaking to the SLS program. It's a spending pro, tell somebody help. Service plan allocation limit. So depending on your supports intensity scale level, if you're in SLS, you will get a 25% increase in what the cap was. So a little bit more expenditure.
It's not a separate program.
not a separate program. It's just an increase in funding, or an increase allowed in funding, right?
You might say, when is fiscal year 15?
July 1st.
Of this year.
Of this year. So fiscal year 15, July 1st, 2014, goes through June 30, 15. So this is starting right away. As a matter of fact, let me talk about the bottlenecks a little bit more, and then I'll tell you what we're debating with the state. These two big numbers up here mean that as people are enrolled in the program, they have to have a supports intensity scale assessment. It takes some time to do that. We have in our catchment area, we have two people who are qualified to do those assessments. There aren't enough people in the state to do them. The state is doing a training this week to grow that by 10. What the state should be doing is they should be doing that every week. I mean, they'll need hundreds of people to do these assessments to get this to get that work done for that. These two big numbers, 2,300 people all have to have a supports intensity scale done before they can determine what their level of funding is going to be. I have recommended to the state that they start that now. The state wants to talk about it.
What are the qualifications?
They have to go through the training, and they have to make sure that when they're doing an assessment of a person that it matches up with a second person might do, so that, you know, I might not be as liberal as somebody else, so that can't happen. We all have to be given the same scores.
College educated, social worker?
Do you know?
Case management
level, which is college educated, and then they go and get further training for the assessment, to do the assessments. The state might contract it all out because they've never been presented with this problem before. So the kids in CES did not have to have that. So this growth that we saw last year, that was not one of the bottlenecks. With the adults, going to be huge. Imagine uniquely in the state, in Boulder County, we took some local funds and did supports intensity scales for many of the people in the adult wait list. We just wanted to get a handle on what did the wait list look like, and families that were kind enough to allow us to do that, we may have done it with 130 or 140 people. I have presented that to the state saying, we've already got 130-140 done. Will you accept that? Will you accept it's the same people doing the tests? But the state might say, well, that's too far away from when the enrollment starts, or they might say, okay, we'll go with that, and within a couple of years, maybe. The problem is getting a decision made by the people at the state to say, yes, go with it, we're good to go, enroll them. So that's a bottleneck. Of this number right here, 50 of those are supposed to be enrolled this next 4 months. So they're waiting right now. As soon as the governor signs that bill, which could have been yesterday or today, I just haven't heard. Might be in a couple of days, might be in, I don't know how long. I think he can sit on it for a couple of weeks. As soon as that bill is signed, those 50 people should be enrolled. Now, I brought that up with our friends at the state, the Division for Developmental Disabilities, and they don't have plans to do that. They don't have any plan. I'm not sure what their plan is. So that means that it takes 3 months to get them enrolled, and by the time they start billing, we won't be burning down enough of that money that they planned on spending this year, which means there's more of a surplus. This year is no different from last year. Once that surplus is built up, the general fund portion of it will dump into that fund. But there's no logical reason, there may be reasons, but there's no logical reason in my mind where those people shouldn't be enrolled right now. Might as well move on them.
How much money is being used then to build on this additional staff training of that child?
Thank you for bringing that back up. So the question was, how much money is going into building this infrastructure to be able to do this, I think is the question. And so if you recall back a couple of slides, I talked about us trying to capture $4.5 million back from this year. it's intended specifically for that. And we're trying to put a plan together with the department to say, how do you move that money out? How much money do you move out to each community center board to be able to hire case managers to do the work that needs to be done? Because if I back up a little bit and say, we don't get paid to enroll these people. Their funding starts once they're in a service and we're providing targeted case management, we can bill for it. Everything that happens in front of that, it's not free, but it's practically free. So the state, it's free. For us, it costs us stuff. So if we start looking at this, we need to hire 3 case managers now to train them and start the enrollment process if we are enrolling people July 1st. We don't have any revenue to do that. So this plan is, with that $4.5 million, to distribute that across the state for not only the community center board functions to enroll them, but for each service provider for the adult HCBS DD waiver to do the same thing, because they have to go through the same thing. They have to talk to families. They have to learn to, you know, teach me about this individual. We have to know all the specifics about them. We have to get the setting. We have to arrange for the host home. It's a family caregiver model. We have to hire. We have to go through the training. Completely unfunded. So over the last 10 years, or historically, these numbers are trickling in. 7. We can handle 7 across the state. That's not a problem. So, but all of a sudden, we get this onslaught. We don't have the capacity to do it. We've reported that to the state, and the providers are on board with that, saying we've let the capacity dwindle in terms of not just can we not bring them in, but we don't have all the service menu options that were available for either. Providers are closing their host homes, probably to the tune of 12, 15, or 18 homes closed and were sold in the last 2 years because the rates don't support them. And when you lose a person out of a home, fiscally it doesn't work anymore. We have an empty bed in one of our homes right now. Well, you can operate 7 for a handful of months if it's an 8-bed home. If it's a 6-bed home, you lose somebody, it's hurting even more. So providers are saying, we're not going to play this game anymore to the state. And they're moving people out of the homes, selling off the homes, and that's become a problem. So this infrastructure has been crumbling for the last 5-6 years. So there's some hurdles. So here I am over here waving this flag saying, isn't this great? But we have our work cut out for us, not just Imagine, but all the providers in the network and across the state. We've all had this conversation. The sooner we can get the division to start moving on supports intensity scale assessments, to start moving this money out to the community so we can hire people and train them to be ready to go with this, we'll all be better off. I can report today that's not happening.
How is the pool of people looking for jobs in this area of work?
I'm glad you brought that up, because we're going to move to the, I'm going to move 2 slides ahead just because you just asked that. In my spare time, I sit on the board of directors for Workforce Boulder County. And this was just reported 2 weeks ago to me. This is a program year 13. They go from July 1 to January 31, just for 6 months. There's nearly 16,000 job openings in Boulder County right now. There's 8,000 job seekers. That's a new problem for us. Glad you asked that question. We're moving on to slide 12. It's very intuitive. This is wonderful. So this is the same report that came back from them. And so if you look down here, healthcare and social assistance, you'll see some names you're familiar with. Carmel Community Living Corporation is Imagine. So they basically said, who are these companies in these service industries, these industries across. So this is all from Workforce Boulder County. We make up about 13% of the total job openings at 2,000. But look back a year, it was only 800, now it's 2,000. We are in a new world of competition for employees. I'm going to back up people online to slide 10. To add to this, this is our comparison of rates. This red line is the trend line for the CPI index. So if we started back here in 98 and you said $100, take $100 in the consumer price index and followed the trend in rate increase in consumer price index were projected out here for fiscal year 15. And we started the same down here with rates, same $100, in rates that we are paid to do what we do. This is a provider issue more than a community center board, but it's a provider issue. And rates are this blue line here, and the trend is down here. We've lost 20% purchasing power that we had back here in that number of years, and this is the direction we're going. So in that budget proposal next year, they're projecting a 3% increase for our rates. Well, that's that rate increase right there. Consumer price index going up steeper than that. We can't keep up. Now we can't keep up with rates, and I'm speaking on behalf of our providers and our network, because the purchasing power is going down. That means food, lights, water, heat, gas. Who takes a hit? I mean, the only thing you can do is have services are going to suffer. And we're competing with that new job market that I just showed you in the slides, next two slides. So that was our challenge. Talk about having to get creative. So slide 10, slide 11 talks about the number of jobs that are opening. This is just Boulder County, and I only threw it up there because it was like a eye-opener for me. Unemployment claims is dropping, as you would expect. Correct. Isn't that amazing?
At Boulder County?
Yes. I know. Anybody want a new job? Don't spread this around, imagine, to our employees. We don't need this. We don't need to be. Okay. I mentioned the regional centers before. 300 people continue to be served by the state. Those are state employees. They have assessed that 150 people are ready to move to community settings. I have no idea what that means. They can all move anytime they want. Families are a little reluctant to do that. They don't trust what goes on in the community so much. The director of the Department of Human Services is coming out to visit us this Thursday because we with them have successfully placed an individual in one of our homes, and the family is thrilled about it. So he wants to take that story back and tell the other 150 and say, you know, it's not such a bad place to get services in the community. So he's coming out to meet that individual and talk with us about how we might be able to help them build that trust with families so that they're more comfortable with coming into the community. They've been living for the last 20, 30, 40 years in the institutional settings or in state-operated homes. They've had success with 54 people being moved out, and now they're taking their houses offline. So their houses are typically 8-bed houses. They didn't say they were going to sell them yet. Joint Budget Committee thinks differently. And they want to go on a person-by-person basis, because I would go to the director and say, why don't you just pick a date and close things down and move people to the community? And politically, that doesn't make sense for them to do that. Doesn't matter to me, but 13 states don't have any facilities like this. It's all privatized. I just threw this in here for the fun of it. Last year, we put plans in place to build a home in Broomfield. This is a 6-bed home that we're building. Santa Fe Drive in Huron. Actually, I was shown a picture of it today. It has windows in it now and is a little bit further along. So midsummer, probably that would be ready to go. Will we have resources to fill it? We'll see. I'm optimistic. This is a home that's specifically designed for seniors with intellectual and developmental disabilities.
What exactly does that mean?
Which part?
Oh,
only that we would be targeting it for seniors. I mean, it would be, this home is the same kind of footprint of the last home that we built in Longmont, wide open interior, wheelchair accessible. It will not be a smart home. That's not the intent. But there will be some capabilities of this home, as any modern home would have. But we are targeting it because we know, or we're projecting, that as the senior population grows generally, so will it happen with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And so people that are now served either in family caregiver models or in host home models might reach a point where maybe we need a staff-supported model. Now the staff, these are the homes that other providers are closing down. We're going in the other direction because we see a need, and we think that we, I'm hoping, that over time that we can influence the rates to be able to support these homes. If not, we'll have to go to Plan B, which. Well, you saw the, you know, when you look at the staff costs and the staff availability, you know, as more, as they come out of the recession, competing to have employees as opposed to contracting out with host homes is quite a challenge. And the rates supporting the home, it only currently supports it if all beds are filled. So you lose a bed and you're in trouble. I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. So we think that as the population, you know, over the next 5, 10, 20 years, that will be a need. Now, the other providers have already said they can't wait that long. So we don't really have a lot of providers in our catchment area that are operating staffed homes. They're either doing host home models or family caregiver models. Yep, Jim. We do not. The question is, are we planning any? We are not planning any further homes at all, right now. And I'm pretty sure the board would support me in that statement. It's a lot of money. You know, a house like this, $1.2 million or $1.4 million. I'm not sure. $1.2 million probably. Without the support of the HUD grant, we would no way would be able to do this. No way. So. Annual cost per head. John, you going to take a shot at it? Yeah, Jody's not here. Yeah, nice. You look. I know you were looking. For probably, yeah. 60 to 70,000 a year, and I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, what do they get in their supports intensity scale. You know, if a person has tremendous needs, there's more money available.
Perspective is not about the cost to keep somebody in jail.
Interesting thought. Yes, it is. Yeah. It's about the same cost of keeping somebody in jail. Yeah, it's about it. I'd like to think. Yes. Okay. Yeah, look at that.
Mm-hmm. Syndrome, and a lot of times the only services are jail. So, and I'm trying to prevent that from happening. So, does the state, do they look at that, or does anybody look at, if we don't do this, it costs us more?
Yes, the legislature.
Right,
the legislature definitely looks at it. So,
okay,
over the last couple of years, for example, what might happen is. To get into the more expensive HCBS DD waiver, the comprehensive waiver, which is the $63,000 to $65,000 a year on average, the state would say, well, we're only funding emergency resources, and emergency meant that you're at risk of being homeless, and we've actually had that happen here, where family would come to us and say, because my son or daughter, they're now homeless, call up the state, and we would get an emergency resource. Ridiculous.
It
if you, well, it's not going to be a problem. It doesn't look like next year, but historically that would happen with the state. Because they know they've got, somebody's going to be at the shelter of the homeless, so they're going to be in jail. And so that met the criteria of emergency resource, which we didn't manage, the state managed.
I'll follow up.
Yes. Start with us.
I did.
Yeah. With our case management? And you couldn't make it. You had. Much worse than being homeless?
Yes, much worse.
Interesting. We'll talk more. I know you have to go, but.
Yeah, I thank you. I'm new to this.
Yeah.
It's promising.
And I think we have a good year in front of us. I don't want to. The challenge is big, but. We'll take all the help we can get.
Special ed, I'm doing tech writing, and I've got pretty sick ones. Maybe, it's possible that
sure.
If you let the word out,
sure.
People that might get involved to help you fill those
I think that, thank you.
Thank you.
Along those lines, the next step for us inside Imagine is to start with our management team to figure out how are we going to address the onboarding in the next 3 to 4 months. So we will be ahead of the game. I've been saying that, disappointed in the state not being further along with it, but they've had their hands full. They're moving around. They're doing the best they can, so I guess. Now, questions. Do you have questions of me? Questions about Imagine? Questions about our service area?
Wondering if there are things that we can do as parents of kids to support what you're trying to do.
Right. One biggie is, and we're going to be conducting a little bit of this activity tonight with our board of directors, the people that need to be thanked, Joint Budget Committee members. 6 people in the state manage the budget. They have been incredibly supportive of the entire waitlist issue and moving money out. They've committed the dollars out of the budget. The departments administratively have had trouble moving it, so maybe you wouldn't want to send a thank you that way, but you can definitely send a thank you in the direction of the Joint Budget Committee, because they have been unbelievable. That's one big help, because that keeps the momentum going, because we will need more in the years to come, but this is just a huge, huge year. In terms of how do we get past this execution, lack of execution, if I had advice, I'd give it to you. I mean, I've been knocking my head against the wall, so. Other questions? Well, thank you very, very much for your attention, and I'm optimistic about this coming year. And when I say we have all these challenges, that's what we're paid to do, so it's not a bad thing. But it's better than the other problem, that's right. Thanks so much.